Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. I'll explain how I lay out the program each day. First, it's always about health and nutrition and healing, about 20 minutes, more or less. Then we look at environmental issues. We look at anything involving public health. We generally have commentaries by some of the most distinguished and interesting and wise men and women on the planet. If they can be here, it's in person. If they can't, we share with you what they've written. We also try to find guests, guests that you will not hear on other programs, guests who have something relevant to say, who are not here to share an ideology. We stay away from all think tanks and foundations because those are just propagandists. Instead, we believe in creating our own original thought. And then we take on some social issues and, time permitting, open it up for you to have a chance to share your information. All of that we're going to do today. Health and nutrition, then commentaries. Today is from John Whitehead. The experiment in freedom is failing. And if time permits, I'm going to ask you to call in at the end of the program to share your views of why we are not concerned. We don't seem to be doing anything whatsoever about all the incursions into our freedoms, as if someone has a right to be in our bedroom, in our kitchen. Every one of the new devices, including toys for children, are transmitting back information about the ultimate user. Who gives them permission? Why are we not concerned? Also today, we're going to have insights from Abby Martin about what really goes on in the Israeli-Palestinian territory. She was there. She gives us her firsthand observation. Also today, can millennials change a light bulb? Think it's a joke? We're going to break. Well, it's just 2.5 minutes, but it's a true story. And then today, we're going to take a look at Emma Watson and the future of feminism. I believe that there's a call now for something we should have had and did not, and that is spiritual feminism, where it's not about blaming men or wanting to demasculize all men and more feminizing all men. That's a big mistake, and that's one of the reasons it has not been widely supported. So we have a lot to share, as you see. And I also want to mention, for those of you who are listening over a radio, that is becoming the minority position. The majority of people now listen either over the internet or through a telephone or some form of portable listening device. We have a number you can call to listen. Three ways. One, let me give you the number, and you can listen live anywhere in that your cell phone can work. 424-203-8046. Now, there might be a problem at a station. A station may lose its signal, as sometimes happens with our sister station, WBAI in New York. There's some transmitter problems. So you just go to your phone, and you can still listen live. There's also on your cell phone, there's an app, and it's prn.fm, prn.fm. And that way, everywhere you take your phone, you can listen. But you can't listen live, you can archive. Let me give you archive number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. Daffodils can soon help cure cancer. Who says? University of Brussels. A big study there. So the question is, how would it happen? Now, it may sound like a folk fairy tale, but according to researchers in the RNA Molecular Biology Laboratory at the University of Brussels, there exists a scientific link between cancer and an extract of daffodils. Researchers have been able to extract a natural anti-cancer compound from the European native daffodil. And this is, I'll spell it for you, H A-E-M-A-N-T-H-A-M-I-N-E. If any word ends in A-M-I-N-E, that's an amino acid. So this is a haemanthi amine, and they observed this compound blocked the progression of a protein which is essential for the growth of cancer cells. Quote from the study. Cancer cells are particularly sensitive to a reduction in protein synthesis. All right? And the compound achieves this by binding to ribosome, a protein builder found in cells, which is responsible for the synthesizing process. The compound also hinders the production of such nanomachines in the nucleus, which will trigger the stabilization of the protein P53 and lead to the elimination of cancer cells. I realize that's a little scientific, but please remember, we have an awful lot of doctors, scientists, nurses, people with advanced educations in sciences who like, and they tell me this, please give us the background on what something is. We'd like to know because we'd like to follow up on it. And this was published in the peer-reviewed scientific journal Structure from Cell Press. So you can read more on it. So in just a very brief overview, the effects on protein synthesis, how protein is used in our body, the ribosome, P53 stabilization would be to block that process, and it does so. So that's how it works. From the Mayo Clinic comes research that cancer survivors often face another hurdle: faster aging. Treatment that can help people beat cancer using the orthodox methods can cause them to age prematurely and die sooner. That's according to the Mayo Clinic. And cancer survivors naturally age faster than others who haven't had cancer, and they're much more likely to develop long-term health problems related to aging while they're still relatively young. That's according to the study. Now, these ailments can include hormone and gland disorders and heart problems, brittle bones, lung scarring, and even new cancers. Also, survivors are far more likely to become frail as the years pass. And childhood cancer survivors' estimated life expectancy is 30% lower than the general population. And they're 600% more likely to develop a second cancer. And with the number of cancer survivors growing, the medical profession needs to start paying more attention to how to keep these people healthy throughout their now extended lifespans. And that's according to a senior medical researcher at the professor of medicine at the Mayo Clinic. Quote, "We are now beginning to see the gravity of a multitude of complications among cancer survivors. There is an essential and immediate need for formal cancer survivorship programs to prevent complications in millions of cancer survivors." I did some research this morning. I was startled by this figure. Currently, there are about 30 million cancer survivors worldwide, but researchers predict that about 19 million new cancer diagnoses will be made every year by 2025. And if these people survive their cancer, they're going to face a lot more health consequences. Now, why? It's simple. The destruction of chemotherapy and radiation. Yes, in the short term, you can shrink a cancer cell if you hit it with enough radiation or chemotherapy. But at the same time, they're not looking what this does to the immune system. It's destroying the immune system. So what we see often, what I've seen thousands of times, is that in the short term, the patient says, hey, we beat cancer, I'm in remission, and then you start doing the analysis. The hair falls out, the eyebrows fall out, the fingernails become brittle and cracked and fungus, the toenails the same, skin on the body begins to change. Frequently they get that leathery skin. They get sores that don't heal, a cut that will not heal, and their immune system is weakened. They get osteoporosis. Many times they go through what effect is a chemical castration. And it is terrible on a woman's reproductive system as well as a man's. They frequently suffer from low or non-existent libido. They end up with malnutrition, multiple vitamin D, zinc, magnesium. They end up with heart fluctuations and arrhythms. Now, that's from the standard therapy where you're told you've got a successful therapy. So everybody celebrates. And then a year later, the person shows up at the office saying, my cancer's back. So what does the doctor do? What they all do, unfortunately. They hit it again. This time there's no immune system left. And they may slow the cancer, but more often than not, the person dies of it. So for those who don't die, that's why the Mayo Clinic is finally, honestly, which is good, telling the truth, that the therapy, now are they going to stop therapy? No, they'll double down, they'll even have more therapies that are toxic. And this is the frustrating part. Chemotherapy, all chemotherapy, there's no exception, and radiation, all radiation, is toxic. It kills about 100 to 1,000 healthy cells for every cancer cell. And if a person does succeed in not dying, they take 100% of the credit. They give no credit to the person. It's all in the therapy. But you also are going to age your genes at the cellular level. You're promoting DNA to start unraveling because you're destroying the telomerase enzyme necessary to create telomeres, which are the end caps of the chromosomes, the proteins, which keep the cell from prematurely dying. And that's why even if you survive the cancer, you live a much shorter life. And I remember having a debate with a head of the National Cancer Institute. They won't debate you today, but back then they did. And he was very thoughtful. And he acknowledged all the great work that the National Cancer Institute did in the 1950s and 60s. But this was now the 70s. And chemotherapy and radiation were what was happening. And they were having some success with four different chemotherapies on childhood leukemias and in non-Hodgkin's lymphomas, and they were living longer, and that was true. But then they didn't have the follow-up, and later a 20-year follow-up found that these kids that had grown into adults were having relapses and death. So we're not looking far enough down. You end up with bone marrow transplants. You're 800% more likely to become frail. And long-term steroid treatment, which they're suggesting, puts you at an increased risk of cataracts and liver damage, nerve damage, impaired wound healing, and diminished immune system. And the cancer drugs have been associated with hearing loss and reduced thyroid levels and high blood pressure and heart failure and muscle weakness and arthritis and infertility and constipation and kidney and liver disease. And radiation therapy has been linked to dementia and memory loss and hardening of the arteries and secondary cancers. I would never recommend someone take tamoxifen. It's used against breast cancer. But women who take it have a much higher incidence of cataracts. It's just one thing. And also, if you take chemotherapy, if you're a younger woman, you're far more likely to go into early menopause. So I believe that it's time now for a movement to show what other therapies would enhance the immune system. Later today on our sister station, WBAI, at 4 o'clock, there'll be a gentleman who I have not spoken with. His name is Sal. When I met him, he was at his death date. He had gone in for surgery of the lungs, and they opened him up, and his lungs were so full of cancer, they sewed him up, sent him home with opiates to deal with the pain, and suggested hospice care. They said he had a short period of time to live. And instead of doing what most people will go home and just accept. They just wait, or they'll go into hospice care, and they say their goodbyes. Sal came to a retreat just a few months ago. And at that time, he could barely walk. He couldn't hold himself up. He had trouble breathing, very labored breathing. And I remember that I do a lecture every night, but I do many lectures all day. And wherever I see there's a problem, I try to provide people with insights and a solution. And I remember he came over to me, and he looked at me, and there were these very sad eyes. And he said, "Do you think there's a chance?" I said, "Of course there are." I said, "Saul, you got the A-team working with you." And he smiled. "Go forward." A week, he began to stand up straight, began to have more energy, was able to sleep through the night without waking up. And now he went back home and went back to the hospital, and they did a whole series of scans on him. And the cancer shrinking. We then followed up. I gave him a different protocol. And now he went back again. No, right now as we're speaking, as I'm on the air right now, he's getting his next set of scans. Those results will be available tomorrow, but he's going to talk about what has happened up to this point. Now, is this a single, unique, and unusual anomaly? No, this is normal. I could give you a lot of people who had different cancers in stage, days, months, hours to live, today are cancer-free and living normal lives. Would you think that anyone from Sloan Kettering, MD Anderson, Roswell Park, Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic would come and say, "We'd like to sit in and see what you do"? Not once. Why? Is it something that Fritz Perl, the father of Gestalt psychology, said, a fear of knowing is a fear of doing? That they can't support two different systems simultaneously, that we are a monotheistic society, we only believe in one truth at a time, as if there's only one way of approaching a problem instead of multi-dynamic approaches. Whatever the excuse is, they've never once came to see why their patients are not dead. He's off all opiates, by the way. Try that. We're in an opiate epidemic. Oh, it's so hard to get off. Oh, you can't get off. We've gotten everyone off. Saul's off all opiates. How did he do it? Remember, Bannister, who just died yesterday, by the way, I think it was his 88 or something like that, the English runner, he did 3 minutes, 59 seconds, and 4/10 of a second. And just 2 weeks later, a guy from Finland did 3:57, and they raced together, and he won again. Bannister did it at 3:58. So for all of history, no one had done faster than 4 minutes. And then within weeks, people were beating his time. But he was still the first to do it. And that's why he was recognized as one of the most important athletes in Great Britain's history. And he was in world history. He was a motivator to all of us who said it can't be done, but he did it. So for the person who says, "You can't cure terminal cancer, but we've done it. You can't reverse Alzheimer's, we've done it. Can't reverse autism, we've done it." How many times do we have to do it? So I believe there's a need now for a national movement of articles, documentaries, webinars, information, collectives, to tell the stories of the people who've done it. There are many different approaches. There are a lot of people alive today who went through orthodoxy. It failed. At least 95% of all the people who have cancer go through orthodoxy first. When it fails, then they go to alternatives. So the fact that you're getting a person that's already had chemotherapy or radiation or surgery and it's failed means you're really having to come from way behind. But we've done it. So one of the projects I'm going to be doing over the next 12 months is trying to get more articles written by more people, physicians, naturopaths, people in the healing field who are using natural and alternative methods to help them with their cancers. And then we'll share this. Now, this will be rejected and attacked by orthodoxy. They'll say, we want to use proven scientific medicine. Well, first, that's an oxymoron. That does not exist. There is no such thing as scientific medicine. You have science and you have medicine. I can give you 100 examples of what they call scientific medicine failing miserably. Vioxx is a good example of that. Synthetic hormone replacement therapy for women is a good example of that. So I'm writing an article now about the new inquisition in medicine. And the inquisitors are these so-called quackbusters, the people who are true believers, the ultra, ultra, ultra orthodox that science should be the only reality we live by, as if anything on the spiritual, the ethereal realms are of no consequence. And they're here to make sure, just as in the 12th century, that no one would defy the church and all of its superstitions. Well, science is filled with superstitions, as is medicine. And so they want you to believe that science is the only place where we begin to have a reality. And I say, listen carefully what I'm going to say. Please listen. Write it down. Reality always supersedes scientific validation, meaning reality exists. Then it's up to science to try to figure out how that reality exists and what it means. Only by that can we understand how so many people have been sacrificed, who've been injured or died. Tens of millions in the United States have been put through a medical scientific inquisition. They were true believers, and they're dead. So it's time that there was an allowance for freedom of additional thought without the guardians of the gates, these wolves from hell who call themselves the experts. These are just rabid ideologues, and they don't want to have discussions, because anyone who discussed anything with them, you'd see the fallacy of their views. Finally, a compound in red wine and chocolate prevents smallpox virus cousins from replicating. This is research from Kansas State University. So the secret to stopping some viruses from making people sick might be hidden in grapes, grape juice, red wine, and chocolate. But that doesn't mean having more the alcohol. It's resveratrol. You've heard me speaking about this for 15 years. Let me spell it for you. Write it down, please. R-E-S-V-E-R-A-T-R-O-L, resveratrol. Quote, resveratrol is a small natural compound in many plants like grapes, cacao beans, peanuts, and blueberries. Our recent study found that high concentrations of resveratrol, higher than anything you might find in food naturally, prevent cowpox viruses from replicating in human cells. Wow. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Frontiers in Microbiology. In an article entitled Suppression of Pox Virus Replication by Resveratrol. Quote, resveratrol can be chemically synthesized or extracted from fruits. Our research may be a stepping stone to using resveratrol as a complementary treatment for viruses during a time of growing concern over drug resistance. Okay, that's good research. And keep in mind, if you're following the protocols I've been advocating, you're already taking resveratrol because you're eating grapes or drinking grape juice or having grape powders, which is the most concentrated of all, and you're getting a good amount, 100 to 200 milligrams of resveratrol a day into your system. We're 25 minutes into our program. I'm Gary Nall, and we're going to take a break and come right back. Tomorrow, colon cancer patients who eat nuts have lower death risk. Who says? Yale University. And in a major study, and I'll go into that and some other important studies, as we do every day, including tomorrow, the University of Ottawa, your brain on and runner's high, how aerobic exercise creates new cells through neurogenesis. Wow. New cells when you're out there doing long-distance workouts? Yes. So, a lot to share. Please stay with us. Back in a moment. We have a guest coming up in about 10 minutes, Gerald Salante, talking about the trends that are happening. And I have some audio clips to play you. But we're going to go to Elizabeth McCormick, who's standing by to answer some of the questions or address your questions. And you can write your questions or comments to prnstudio@gmail.com, prnstudio@gmail.com. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Gary. Two things here. First of all, a political question. Why is the left eating itself? But then we have a second, which is a health question from Marguerite. She's been listening for over 35 years, but says, unfortunately, she doesn't use the information as she should, and anyway is now being diagnosed with diabetic neuropathy. And she feels foolish, she says. Her brain is like a sieve. She seems to be forgetting almost everything. So she asks, what does she do and where does she start?
Okay, I'll address her question first. We have to ask ourselves a basic question. Why do we honor bad choices? Now, that may seem irrational. You could say, well, we don't honor bad choices. Yes, we do. Because if we ask, what was the woman's name, Marguerite, that you just said?
Yes, Marguerite, yes.
If we were saying, Marguerite, go out in the middle of a busy street, when the light turns green, walk across, stop, and just defecate right there on the street.
Right.
And she would say, no, I'm not going to do that. And you'll say, why not? Well, many reasons. A, it's illegal. B, it's unsanitary. C, it's undignified. And it's lacking in the respect for other people. And she would be corrected with each one of those. Now, Marguerite, you listened to this program for, what, 30 years? And now you have diabetic condition and neuropathy? So if I ask you, why are you eating your pizza? You would give me a different explanation and a different excuse. That's what I mean by we never look at the advantage in a bad choice. But there is an advantage. It allows us comfort. It allows us security. It allows us to vent. It's comfort food. It allows us not to exercise because we don't want to go through the stress that we perceive as being a challenge and a chore to our comforts. And that's why smart people do stupid things and good people do bad things. So what she is doing, she's engaging in willful ignorance of the consequences of those choices. She's not extending her thought from a bad choice. What is the likely outcome of a bad thought? Look forward. Play it forward. So when you intentionally engage in ignorance, it's not because you're ignorant or stupid. To the contrary. I've seen some of the most learned minds in the world who act out in ways that are absolutely against all of their intelligence, but their intelligence is one field they've mastered, and they would never bring junk thoughts into a purified mind. But they bring junk food into an adulterated body, as if the mind and its accomplishments and standing and depth should be so sacrosanct that everything in life should be measured by the degree to that which a person succeeded. And it goes against all reason. So what a person does, they accumulate negatives, they accumulate resistance arguments, they accumulate excuses, they accumulate. So they have this huge hoarded room that they can't even move in. They have so many excuses. Do you want to get healthy? Yes. Do you want to eat? Do you want to start cleansing? Every excuse you give a person, no matter how intelligent, they'll give you a what they consider a reasonable argument as to why to resist. Now, ask that person, what is the central meaning of your life? And they will not be able to tell you. They can only tell you what they've succeeded at, which is their career or some achievement. That is not the meaning of their life. You are far more significant than your career, and we do not accept that. So ask a person, once you find the center of your life, the meaning of your life, what you're willing to honor, and honor without any junk thought, junk energy, toxic energy, dramatic energy, that person will never again have to be coached, motivated in any way. It's a self-generating process. That's why you have to go beyond diet. You have to go beyond supplements. You have to go beyond exercise. You have to go beyond stress management. You have to go to the core of life. Why are you alive? Once you determine that, then you determine what you're willing to sacrifice to find meaning. I'll sacrifice ignorance. I'll sacrifice bias. I'll sacrifice ideology. I'll sacrifice my discipline. I'm going to put all those aside because I'm not going to sacrifice the meaning of my life for my weaknesses of conditioning. Do you understand what I just shared?
That's very good, yes. I mean, how many people are talking about that? Yeah, that's excellent.
Okay,
very
good.
Helpful to a lot of people.
And let me save the question for tomorrow because we're backing up a bit here.
Yes, okay.
I will talk about, you ask what, why the left is...
Why is the left eating itself?
Why the left eating itself?
Yes.
Okay, well, it's a legitimate question, and it is happening. And I'll give you my insights into the failure of political correctness as an ideology, the failure of identity politics, the failure of a young, immature, non-wise generation to feel suddenly by screaming and yelling and demeaning that that is making a point. It is not. It's merely offending people. And why the vast majority of people will not be motivated by fear, threats, or humiliating gestures by people who don't know how to change a light bulb.
Yeah.
All right?
Okay, thank you. Thanks.
That'll be by tomorrow. Now, let's go over before we go to my guest who's standing by. I want to just say hello to a Dr. Steve and Lou Anne Panessi, our sister station WBAI in New York. I was on for 2 hours this morning live helping him raise some funds. I'm only going to take maximum 4 minutes here in order to try to let people know that there are alternative approaches to getting healthy. And if we're healthy, getting healthier. And if we really want to reverse things, we have to reverse old habits by supplementing them with new ones and disengaging from what we're not and honoring our authentic selves, because all healing comes through the essential chi of the authentic person. And on the line is a board-certified physician trained in orthodoxy. And he never even told me he was a medical doctor. I just saw him showing up at a couple retreats. And he was always talking with people that I did work with. And let's see what he learned from them. We'll call him Dr. Steve. Nice to have you with us today, Dr. Steve.
Hi, Gary. How you doing?
I'm always better. If I was any better, I'd burst.
Oh, my gosh.
Steve, tell us what you observed, and how many retreats have you attended?
Oh, probably 8, 9, 10. I'm not sure.
Why do you keep coming back?
Well, it's fascinating to see people with chronic medical conditions reversing them, or at least dramatically improving them in just the short time that they're at the retreat. And I followed up on some of these people after the retreats as well, and the ones that stick with their protocol and their way of life, and they continue to improve. It's fascinating.
Give us some examples of what you've personally seen. including not just watching something, but speaking in private with the people that have experienced change, and just you and them talking.
Well, how about Alzheimer's disease? At the last retreat, we had a man who had severe Alzheimer's disease, advanced stage, which the medical community has no answer for. And day after day, he was improving. And by the last week to 2 weeks, he was power walking multiple times a day, had cogent conversation, was making jokes. It was quite a turnaround.
You had conversations with him?
Yes.
Did you notice the first week he was there, the first few days, he kept his head down, and when he looked at you, he had that long, distant Alzheimer's stare, as if there was no one in front of him?
Yes, that's very common with late-stage advanced Alzheimer's.
And he, did you notice like that he wasn't speaking? He just, when he first came there, he would just sit there, bend over, kind of about 12-degree slant, and it's as if he wasn't in the room. Did you notice by the middle of the second week he was not only upright, but he was actually engaging in conversation and answering every question that I'd be asking the people? He'd be the first one to give answers, and he gave correct and in-depth answers?
True. A very charming man.
Did you notice that he was engaging in humor and cracking jokes for everyone?
Yes, he was.
Would you have thought that was the same person in less than 10 days?
No, and that's the incredible thing. And how in 10 days does someone improve their Alzheimer's when it really can't be done in the Orthodox medical community?
Have you seen end-stage cancer people walk out of theirs with a new lease on life?
I sure have.
What does that tell you?
There's a different paradigm in your community.
A different mindset, a different way of looking at it. You've seen, what conditions have you seen where there have been remarkable changes?
Well, multiple sclerosis. We've seen dramatic changes with different people with multiple sclerosis. Depression, a young man who wouldn't even come out of his room the first couple of days of the retreat. And by the end, he had a sparkle in his eye and was exercising, and he was so happy to be there, and he was engaging back and forth during the lectures. That was a lot of fun to see him. And, of course, the Alzheimer's, multiple Alzheimer's patients that have been there, and simply people with diabetes who get their glucose under control in a short period of time. Arthritis also, which is some people might think is a simple thing, but it's debilitating. And I see people who can hardly walk when they get there, and they're power walking within a few days.
Were you there when a woman, she's a lawyer with Pacifica for years over on the West Coast, Carol Spooner, had end-stage emphysema? Were you there when she was there?
I don't remember her specific.
Okay, well, she came with an oxygen and left without it and breathing normally. Just, okay, good. I just wanted your input as an Orthodox board-certified physician who at least you had the decency to come and observe for yourself some phenomena that other doctors were not willing to do. Have you met other doctors there?
I have, and they usually are a little skeptical, but you can't help but observing people improving.
I appreciate you sharing these thoughts with us. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Gary.
And Luann, for those who are coming into the April retreat, the second or third week of April, I believe one's filled already, and this is a fundraiser for our sister station, WBAI. The funds will pay for thousands of premiums that then unburdens the station from having to do that. Give us your number, please, because you speak with everyone to make sure it's right for you.
Yes. My number is 903-881-7008. That's 903-881-7008. Give me a call. I've got only like two positions left in the second week, and I am interviewing people, so we'll probably fill up by the end of the day. But I'm very excited to have the opportunity to bring more people in. And I think what Steve said was best. We help people to capture their spirit. And when their spirit is back intact, they become unstoppable. They become full of life again. And I think that has a lot to do with it.
Okay. Thank you, Luann.
Okay.
Tomorrow, I will spend some quality time in my own little memorial for two close friends who passed over the weekend. Not one, two. They were both young. I didn't know they were sick. Had I known, I would have immediately gone to their assistance. A lot of you in the audience will know both of them. But I'll wait till tomorrow because we're getting photographs of them up on our website, and I'm getting a more definitive bio of their work to share with you on tomorrow's program. We're going to take a brief break, come back with Gerald Salante, and Gerald will be leading a meditation I don't think Gerald's ever going to lead a meditation session. Just kidding, Gerald. We'll be back with Gerald Salante in just a second. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's go up to Rhinebeck, New York. We're standing by in an old building. In fact, I was up there with a group that Gerald founded, a group of progressive thinkers to help make the world a better place. Professor Thurman, Robert Thurman at Columbia was there. Ralph Nader was there. Sandy Sheehan was there. Cindy Sheehan. There was a lot of good people. All came together. Gerald was the progenitor of that. And for years, for decades, he puts out the Trends Journal that has been published since 1980. And he looks ahead at what's happening in the world. And as a unique diagnostician and forecaster, he gives us a heads up. Nice to have you with us today, Gerald.
Oh, always great being on with you. Thank you, Gary. Actually, Kingston, New York. We used to be in Rhinebeck. And now we're in Colonial Kingston. Yep. And we launched Occupy Peace from the most historic four corners in America, the only place where there's a pre-Revolutionary War stone building on each corner. And you were gracious and generous enough to come here and kick it off. So thank you very much.
Yeah, and we had 1,200 of our listeners came up for that day, too. Yep. Gerald, look at what's happening in the equity market on Wall Street. And most people are not aware of why there's been this kind of roller coaster up, down 1,000 points, then up 400 points, down 1,100 points, up 300 points, up and down. And people don't know what to make of that. Please give us your insights.
Well, again, you know, I've been on your show for many years, and I was, you know, pessimistic about the stock market. And then Trump won, and we did a 180. And we realize that he's going to do everything he can to keep juicing the equity markets. And so a week after he got elected, we said this is the Trump rally and it's real. And then in December, when we came out with the Trends Journal, we said there's going to be a 10% correction. And in early February, it did. It corrected 10%. The reason being is that the markets are overvalued in terms of price-earnings ratios. They're at historic highs. And they're over-leveraged. They have these things, these ETFs and other scams that people are buying into them. So the markets are over-leveraged and overvalued. So they were due for a correction because the markets went up to their high 45% since Trump was elected in November of 2016. So a correction was in the cards. Now, why did they start going down? Again, I'm only putting out the facts and the reasons why they said. And that is rising interest rates. And what does that mean? Well, first they said, well, interest rates are going to go up because we're concerned about inflation. And our concern about inflation is that wages are going up for the people at a faster rate than previous. Well, wages aren't going up faster. They went up, but they only went up for 20%, and that's in the managerial sector, and that skewed the data. For 80% of the people, the wages are still lagging behind inflation. 78% of the people are living paycheck to paycheck. But that was enough to put shock into the market. Then what happened? Well, then we have the new Fed chair came out, Jerome Powell. Now, remember, he's appointed by Trump, and Yellen, who was appointed by Obama, is out. So you know that the Fed chair is going to do what Trump wants him to do. And anybody that thinks there's a separation between the Federal Reserve, which is as Federal Express, it's just banksters running the country, and Washington, you know, you better grow up and stop reading comic books and believe what you read. They're all connected. So the point being is that Powell came out and said he was going to raise, he left a hint that he was going to raise interest rates faster than people had anticipated. They say they're going to raise them three times this year. He said maybe four. Now let's put this into perspective. They raised interest rates five times since 2015. To the grand total of the Fed rate of between 1.25 and 1.50. When you account for inflation between 2015 and now, that's nothing. So there's still actually negative interest rates, which are a war against the savers. Because we the people can't put our money anywhere other than gambling in the market, because if you put it in the banks, you're losing money. You're not getting any interest on it in reality. So what happened? Wall Street feared that interest rates were going to go up, so the Ponzi scheme would end. The only reason the equity markets have gone up is because of the unprecedented zero and negative interest rate policy and a scam called quantitative easing, in which they buy back bonds, both corporate and government bonds. They don't teach you this in Economics 101. There's no such thing of this ever before when it began under Bush and really pushed through with Obama and keeps going now. So that's what brought down the equity markets, because of the fear of rising rates. So where are they going now? Let's go back to Trump. Again, we said that the markets were going to go up because Trump was elected. The only interest that Trump has that he's shown throughout his whole life is how could I make more money and what could I do to make it? When you look at the tax breaks, don't listen to me, listen to the Tax Policy Center. The 1% got 83% of all of the tax breaks. What does this mean to the stock market? 90% of the stocks are owned by 10% of the people, on average of about $350,000 worth of shares in that 10%. The rest that's owned by the rest of society, the rest of the 10% that's owned by society, it's only about $15,000. So going back, Trump does, he made these tax breaks, they enrich the rich. So now it's allowing the big corporations to bring back all that money that they were hiding overseas rather than paying taxes, pay a very low tax rate on it, but you know where the money's going? No, it's not going to rebuild the infrastructure. It's not going to capital expenditures. It's not going into research and development. It's going into stock buybacks. That's why the market's not failing. Now, again, I'm not making this number up. Already, stock buybacks, since Trump announced the plan, are at an all-time high. And all you have to go do is go back to 2005 when George, the war criminal Bush, did the same thing. 90% of the stock buy, 90% of the money that was repatriated overseas did not go into capital improvements. It went into stock buybacks. Then put more facts on top of it. Look at S&P earnings. Man, companies are doing pretty good. They got like, you know, 15% growth over the last 2 years. They're expecting 19% now. So why are you giving them a tax break? Oh, because the money's going to go into that, the rest of the tax break, by lowering taxes from 35% to 21%. That money's not going to go into capital expenditures, because they've already had profits that they didn't put into capital expenditures. It's going back into the stock market. That's what's juicing the markets. There's the market world of the elite and the very rich, and the real world for the working people, where median household income is below 1999 levels. That's it in a nutshell.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you. And just so people understand, when a company buys back their own treasury stock, then it increases the value of the stock that's still being held out there. The less stock that's out there, the greater its value. The more stock that's out there, the less its value. That's why when the Federal Reserve was allowing up to $21 trillion total from 2007 up until the end of quantitative easing, there was nothing backing it up. It was a fiat currency. Therefore, the value in the dollar substantially was reduced, even though it was still the world's leading reserve currency, representing over 28% of the total currency values in the world. It was the primary currency everybody wanted because America was at least stable, politically stable. I'm not talking about our own intramural politics. I'm talking about we still had more freedoms and more asset growth potential in any other country. But the actual value of the dollar measured against, let's say, some other currencies was diluted. So that's just to give you an idea what the other side of what Gerald was saying. Also, there was a time in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, including up to about 1975, where you could make 5 to 6% return on your interest if you had it in a savings account. Then 2 years ago, we actually went to a negative interest, meaning you actually were paying the bank to hold your money 1 to 2%. And it also impacted the bonds as well. So now the Fed is saying we're going to raise interest rates. Well, that might not seem like a big deal, but what if you've been borrowing money for virtually zero interest if you're a major corporation? So you're loading up on debt because it's not costing you interest. Well, when they start going to 2% or 3%, that is a big deal based upon how many hundreds of billions of dollars a year are borrowed to put into the market. And we make a mistake, Gerald, and I'd like for you to address this. Even with Trump, Trump's bragging about how he's worth $8 billion. What you don't take into account if you're making those pronouncements of how much wealth people have and how wealthy corporations are is a lot of that is a projection of market value and how many times market value they're valued at. And it was recently put up to around 26 times, meaning your company was valued 26 times more than what you actually had. And what's not taken into account what you have is how much of what you have is based upon debt. If you took away all the money given by giving different banks around the world, HSBC and with Trump and other people, that could be almost 90% of their value. So 90% of what they are telling people they own is debt. So take away all the debt in all these corporations. How much are we left with? And what if you actually had to value those corporations and their stock upon their earnings, like 2 times earnings, maximum 3 times earning? Then the stock market would lose about 70% of its value. Your thoughts, please.
Well, add on to that, rising interest rates. You talked about the debt burden. You're looking at worldwide about almost $50 trillion worth of debt. Trump just increased our debt level in the United States by $1.5 trillion and $20 trillion debt. And you mentioned all the debt the corporations have and the people have. And that's why you're seeing housing starts going down in housing and new housing. Interest rates go up, you have to pay more money. Where are you going to get the money when you're already this deep in debt? That's why there's fear in the markets about raising interest rates. How are they going to pay back all of that debt that you just identified? And again, look at the credit card debt. Look at consumer debt. The average household, American households, at $13.5 trillion in debt, over $1 trillion in credit card debt. And now look at the numbers coming in. You're looking at mortgage delinquencies going up. You're looking at car delinquencies going up. And you're looking at credit card delinquencies going up as interest rates go up. So there's two worlds out there. There's the world of the very rich, and they're the equity markets. And then there's the world of we, the little people in Slavelandia, who aren't making living wages. So we cannot afford rising interest rates at a time when people are earning, again, median household income is below 1999 levels. Oh, and I forgot about student debt. How could I forget that? So as interest rates go up, you have to pay more money as you're making less money.
It makes no sense. And also, we're going to pay this year over $900 billion in interest to the banks. And yet, Gerald, final thought, those banks didn't originate that. They're not taking people's savings and then turning that savings over to the government to pay for the Treasury to be able to pay for its wars and pay for its bills. There's this illusion that somehow the money we give back to banks as interest on the national debt, they actually deserve because they created, and nothing could be further from the truth. It's a Ponzi scheme. Please explain that quickly.
Well, it's a Ponzi scheme. Look at the money that guy Jamie Dimon, the head of J.P. Morgan Chase. What, did you just give him $27 million last year? Look at the hedge funds. Blackstone, BlackRock, what did the guy get, $800 million? I mean, grow up, everybody. This is, it's a fascist country. It's the merger of state and corporate powers. They're running the game and they're making the dough. So there's no logic behind any of this. Is there any logic behind a criminal act? Is there any logic behind murder and thievery?
No. And one of the things I'm going to ask you to do on an upcoming program is let us dissect completely the Federal Reserve, the Treasury, the banks, and the regional Federal Reserve banks, and how much money they're all making each year, that we could actually forgive all that. We could eliminate all that, and we would not collapse as a society. And we could forgive all student debt, and we would not collapse as a society because the government controls over 84% of that debt. So we have been given misinformation, and the proponents of that misinformation almost always come from think tanks that there is propagandists for the Wall Street pirates.
No, they're stink tanks. They're not think tanks. You spelled it wrong.
All right.
Well, they are the mouthpieces, as you said, for the corporations that pay them off.
Gerald, thank you very much for all the good work you do with Trends Journal. And people, if you want to know what's going on in the world by a group of minds that look ahead, who are not ideologists, but look at the truth and tell you each month or whenever it comes out, it's the Trends Journal, and you can get more by going to TrendsJournal.com or OccupyPeace.us. Thank you, Gerald Celante.
And thank you. And thank you for all that you do, Gary.
All right. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.